Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, let me grab the headphones. I'll get dialed into the studio. Get these dogs to shut up. Oh, goodness. I better close the window or the neighbors are going to get mad. Hope the guests call in tonight. Wonder if anybody's going to call in. Well, let's do this thing.
It's Rated G Radio, and this is your host, Garrett Miller.
Hey everybody, it's Wednesday, August 13th, and this is Rated G Radio. We are live for the next hour talking real estate with Keller Williams, I'm going to say real estate guru. Is that a fair title to give you, John? John Brashear is on the line tonight. John, welcome back to the show. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Garrett. How are you tonight?
I'm doing good. I always love having you on the show, and I've told you this offline as well as online, but I sincerely mean it. You're always a guest that has something new to talk about in a world that might seem kind of, I don't want to call it boring, because it's never boring. It's always very nerve-rattling and all of that, and it's always exciting, but sometimes the details kind of get, you know, muddied down a little bit. But you always have something fresh to talk about. You're always so prepared, have real practical advice to give people, and are really truly a great resource. So for everybody who's listening, if you haven't heard John before, John is a real estate expert here in Southern California, but he can talk about real estate across the country. He can talk about real estate trends. And tonight we're going to be talking about buying and selling houses in the current marketplace and what you can do to help improve your lot in life in finding your perfect lot or dream home. Along the way, if you want to ask some questions of John, I'm going to open up the hotlines here to the general public. You can call in at 323-657-1493. Again, 323-657-1493. Or you have two other choices tonight. You can always ping me on Facebook. I'm live on there for Facebook chats or instant messages. And I'm also on the Blog Talk chat room for Rated G Radio. And I guess with that, let's get going. John, so one of the things that I wanted to talk about is, you know, the market seems to be kind of moving right along, at least it is here in Southern California. And one of the things that I think is starting to help people is the way that people's credit scores are computed. And can you share information about what's going on with that and how that's changing how home buying is affecting people?
Sure. Well, it's not just home buying. It's really actually the FICO model could raise credit scores that came out. And really basically, I got an ad here from the New York Times, which basically came out here just recently that FICO, which is the creator of one of the most widely used, most influential credit scores, announced that they're going to no longer weigh medical debts. Which accounts for over half, which I wasn't really aware of, half of all unpaid collections or consumer on credit reports. So
really?
What that means, yeah, and that's going to be, that could then really this affect this fall your scores to where they're going to ignore overdue payments that have already been paid also. So if you had something that was necessarily before, if you had something that was overdue or in collections but paid, it's still, you know, it's still counted on your credit for 3 years. Well, they didn't say here 3 years, but I knew it was 3 years. And also the amounts of under $100. So if you had a small collection of items before, that could throw things off if it was, you know, under $100. Well, they're going to ignore those things. They're also going to ignore something that was, like I said, who was overdue and then paid. And then also medical, medical debts or medical collections aren't going to be counted. So, for example, then, the scores used to always be 300 to 800 point scale. That's not going to change. But, like, for example, if you have an average score of, like, 711, you potentially could have your score raised 25 points. What that really relates to, really across the board, it helps everybody, but when you are already pre-approved or you're trying to get that home purchase, of course, your higher your FICO score, the better interest rate you get and the better loan that you can achieve. And, of course, that, you know, that loan, most people, when they do get it, they have it for 30 years. So, you know, that's something that's long-term money in their pocket.
So when we're talking about interest rates, and you'll know, you can actually, you know, put hard dollars to this or hard core examples to this. When people are talking about having their FICO score changed and impacting their interest rates, aren't interest rates like the lowest they've been forever? I mean, like right now?
Well, they are. I mean, the lowest they've actually been was a couple of years ago. You know, I mean, they're still, I mean, historically, they are so low right now. You know, I mean, they're pretty well, you know, and the feds have said that they're going to really keep that trend all the way into the end of the year. Don't have a crystal ball, but, you know, I'm looking at what is the Fannie Mac website, which is a great resource, and that's at freddiemac.com. If people want to get onto a site to look what interest rates are, if they're, you know, they're getting quoted a price by a lender and they want to look at market outlooks, that's a great site to look at. But, you know, they show, the Fed's showing that at the end of the year, beginning of next year, 5%, which is still, if you, you know, go back how many years ago, it was, you know, closer to double digits. So it's, you know, it's a great time to buy, and your values of your homes are up. So, of course, you know, you have equity if you're a home seller, to, if you're thinking about selling, to sell.
So let me ask you this, and this goes back to rates, because I'm not in a position to buy a house at the present time, but, though it certainly may be an attractive idea that I would want to consider in the future. And, of course, who am I going to call first? I'm going to call you. But for people who are saying, okay, my average median score is 711, and that means that I might get an interest rate of, and we can just have fun with numbers, you know. So let's just say that's going to give me an interest rate of, let's say, 6%. But you know, somebody whose credit score is maybe, let's say, 650 or 600, you know, and their scores are bumped up by, you know, 25 points, that kind of puts a different spin on what creditors might be looking at. So instead of saying, well, they're going to get like an 8%, is it conceivable that they could get a 6% too? Or, I mean, and again, that's
actually
this is a
better.
Broad general
if
statement.
If you're going in that way, unless I'm misunderstood, your FICO score is going up, so your interest rate's going to go down.
How much would you think that it would go down? I guess that's really my question. Do you think it's going to go like
I'm not a mortgage lender, and you really need to consult with them. I can definitely put you in contact with 1, 2, 3 people that are excellent that will fit you in the right program. But you know, you're probably looking, you know, closer to 4 as your FICO goes up.
And so, if I have a good credit score today, what is my interest rate going to be approximately?
4.25.
4.25,
or less.
Yeah. Or less. So, and if my credit score is not so great, what is it going to probably be today?
It's going to be higher. It's really going to matter on not only your credit score by itself.
Okay, gotcha.
Right,
okay.
It's a scenario. Because for example, like if you're a buyer and you're out there and you're a veteran, which is they have some fantastic VA and CalVet out there programs for them, your FICA isn't even considered. It's kind of an intangible that they look at and they don't look at. But when they're figuring a loan, they don't even consider your FICA when you do a VA. And depending on what county you're in and what state, you can get into something with no money down.
See, I learn something new every time I talk to you. This is cool. So I'm assuming it's like this in a lot of places across the country now, John, where the markets were hit really, really hard. Now, of course, Orange County and Southern California and a lot of our counties really have been very, very fortunate. Probably some exceptions to that would be like Riverside County or, you know, places that went up way, way, way too fast, came crashing down. And even though they're bouncing back, they're probably not quite the equivalent of like an L.A. or an Orange County area where a lot of the places really have seen some nice growth as far as the pricing of the homes in the last couple of years. They've really rebounded. Across the country, I mean, I think probably a lot of the markets are facing similar gains, which is always good for sellers because, you know, their property values are going back up, not historically to what we'd probably see in the 2004 to 2006 range, but, you know, it's not like, you know, depression era of the 2008 and 2009, you know, like that. So as a really talking both sides of this, because there's, you know, two sides to every story. What are things that sellers are going through right now that they might be finding surprising as they get ready to sell their house?
Well, I guess each particular home, each home sale is different. You know, there's a lot of things that are cookie cutter. It's not, I guess, it depending on what part of the country or even what part of the county now. I mean, your prices did go up in home value the last year and a half, and you can really say that this year they've more stabilized. You know, there's a lot of buyers out there that are very well qualified, and they're I guess you could say demanding more with this. It's not quite completely a seller's market, depending on which part of the country you're in and there. But you know, across the board, home prices they expect in value to go up. And this is from the National Association of Realtors, 4%. You know, and certain things from a year ago, from a year ago, existing home sales, 6.5%. You know, like you were talking about different parts of the country, this last quarter, let's see, in the West it was a little over 7% for the quarter. In the South it climbed 3%. In the Midwest it climbed the most, 9%. Northeast it climbed 5%. So there was different things. The five most expensive housing markets in the second quarter are, four of them are here in California. San Jose area, Anaheim, Orange County, San Francisco, and San Diego. The fifth being Honolulu in Hawaii. So, you know, where you are, Garrett, in Huntington Beach, you have some different factors here. A median price home has, from last year, has raised 11%. But you have new listings that are up. Inventory overall has gained 25%. It's really, well, let me make sure of that here.
You know what? I'm not
supply
surprised.
Supply inventory has increased 25%.
So I guess, you know, like in Huntington Beach,
and that's in Southern California.
Yeah, well, exactly. You know, it was probably about a year and a half ago that the houses weren't even hitting the market. You know, meaning like, you know, you'd see the Keller Williams sign on the dirt, and you know the house is already sold. And I have to admit, now that you're talking about this, and it's not something I really think about until you bring it up, but I am seeing more signs in the dirt for the different houses that are on the market now, and that. I guess that I should find that kind of surprising, especially in a beach community like this where properties tend to go very, very quickly. So what are some advantages buyers can get in? And I'm gonna ask you a specific scenario, and you and I have not talked about this before the show, so I'm going to put you on the spot in just a second. But what are some of the things that buyers are doing that are either helping their position or hurting their position as they get ready to go out and take a look at houses?
Well, I think the number one thing is that when a buyer's out looking for a house, I think the real decision has to be how serious are you as a buyer, you know, and then particularly that home. And are you going in, are you trying to, you know, are you buying it as your home that you're going to live in, or are you going to buy it as an investment? And I think in those two things that kind of makes your decision. And then how serious of a home buyer you are. You know, there's a lot of people out there that are still looking at the market the way it is, and they're looking for deals, which is there's a lot of them out there.
So, I guess what would constitute a deal for a buyer in today's market? What are some things that people go, holy cow, that's something I need to snatch up?
Well, I guess depending on what they're looking for, if they're looking at as an investment property, or they're looking at something that they're, you know, they maybe have a fixer, which they need to do some work on, or necessarily if they have a home that is, they know the comps, which are, the homes that are sold in the area, or even if they have an appraisal on a home, and they have it at one dollar amount, and they want it less than that dollar amount. You know, I mean, whatever that percentage is, you know, that would be a deal.
So do you have buyers that put themselves in positions where they're just kind of shooting themselves in the foot? Because I know, you know, one of the things that you do so well, at least in my experience in talking with you and hearing what your clients have said about working with you, and is that you really try to set, I mean, you counsel them at the very beginning about, you know, here's a realistic expectation of what you should be looking to do when you go take a look at, you know, homes A, B, C, and D. And so I think that you set your clients' expectations up for a better success rate or a better buying experience when you have those types of conversations. But you have people that just say, screw it, John, we're going to do it my way or the highway, and this is what I want to do. And
you know, I've never had the later, and it's really, it's a partnership in the standpoint of a realtor just takes on what the client wants, and you know, if they're either you help them get pre-approved if they're a loan, if they're or if they're fortunate enough to be the what is it here recently the 33% in cash sales, if they're fortunate enough to be in that 33% all cash buying, you know, they know what they want, first of all, you know, and what will suit their needs, either if it's an investment or if it's a home purchase, their first home purchase, or if they're trading up or they're trading down, one way or the other. And, you know, if they're getting a loan, they've already worked themselves with a bank or a loan broker and have decided what range they can afford, you know, and then you help them with that in the standpoint of, you know, so many other homes, depending on the other expenses that would be involved from, you know, your HOAs, your taxes, insurance, things like that, which could be on top of it, besides just your mortgage. And, you know, you look for homes in that range. I think, you know, if you're talking about somebody shooting themselves in the foot is maybe necessarily looking outside of that range, you know. And that you know, is necessarily, you know, a realtor will hopefully not show homes outside of the range that, you know, one, the future buyer wants to be in or two, can afford to be in.
So do you have, as a agent, do you have, you know, when the buyer says, okay, I've gone to the bank, here's the proof that I can qualify for my whatever value, you know, of home that I want to go buy for. Do you have an upper and lower range that you try to go find, or is it pretty easy to find, you know, if they're qualified for a house at $710,000, you know, you go in and find, you know, stuff for $700,000 and $720,000, or, you know, how does that work?
Well, what you do is you shoot in a range for them. You know, really,
okay.
you can shoot up to those range of seven ten. But then also too, it's not just the dollar amount. You're also looking for the other criteria. Do they want a 3-bedroom, 2-bath home? Do they want it to be single story only? You know, how many square feet do they want? Do they want a pool? Do they want an HOA? Do they want a home that is no older than, you know, let's say 25 years old? You know, do they want to make sure that they have a bathroom that's on the master and also a walk-in closet, those kind of things, you know, size of a lot. Those things are more important than other price, because if you don't find those things that are necessarily what the buyer particularly wants, you know, and you try to, you know, see if there's a list, if they have 10 items, you try to get those 10 items all in one home. And then hopefully there's a variety of those homes for them to look at.
In today's market, when you have your initial consultation, you find, you know, obviously price is going to be key, but you find, you know, the 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 things that they must have. How hard is that to, you know, really try to find in any market, but in your experience as a real estate professional?
It's not hard at all. You know, I think a couple of years ago it was more difficult because there was less inventory. You know, in Southern California, you hear probably, if you read, you hear two things. You still hear there's not enough inventory and that the inventory is larger than it was last year, which are both true. But, you know, necessarily there is inventory out there, and as a realtor, you're out looking at homes every day. As homes come on the market, or even homes that are going to be coming on the market, you know what they're going to be in the neighborhoods that you work. And, you know that those homes are coming on, and you know what your clients are looking for. So hopefully, if it's a client that I'm working with, I would preview those homes. And, you know, I'd have that list already for, you know, for buyer A, buyer B, buyer C, or, you know, the Smiths, and know, hey, this is a, you know, this is a great three-bedroom, two-bath home. The lot size is exactly what you want. It's a corner lot. You know, you wanted that. And, you know, look at those kind of emphases. And then the items that maybe were not as important that might not be there, just say, you know, is it okay to see this? This outweighs that, or this has all 10 items that you're looking for, which hopefully, as a realtor, you want to find that. And when you do, it's great.
Okay, so here's my question of the day. I recently had an opportunity to meet a customer, you know, in moving. So, you know, I'm don't cross over into your world. I don't understand your world. I just kind of nod and smile and know that you're my expert in a lot of the things that you talk about. But this was something that when I was talking to the client, it really just kind of set me thinking about, because I know you are totally not like this, and I guess what would you do in this situation? So I guess this is the scenario. So the customer has, they have their house for sale. The buyers come in and say, love the house, love the house, love the house. We want to take the house. They, you know, agree on a price. Everything happens. Do a home inspection. Everything is great, except until, you know, it's really like the 11th hour, 59th minute, 58th second, and there is a crack in the garage floor that has been in the garage for, I mean, obviously it's been there for years and years and years and years and years. It's not anything that just happened overnight. And they are wanting to use that as their sole excuse to get out of making the purchase of the home without having the homeowner go through extensive, like, geologic tests and things like this, you know, because they had already said, okay, well, you got to have this type of a plug in this room, and we want, you know, this, and this, you know, just minor stuff that I think would have been fine for anything. But as a, you know, as the thing that I thought was interesting here, John, is that going through this customer's home, and I see homes everywhere and every style and everything. This house was a rock star house. I mean, it was remodeled, addition added, pool added. You know, you just, everything about the house just reeked quality, workmanship, fantastic. You know, nothing was skimped on. And sometimes you go into houses and they do the, you know, remodels, and you're like, oh my gosh, what'd they do? This was done right. And the, you know, so they're getting ready to close. The people are getting ready to move because, you know, the company's moving them, da-da-da-da. And that buyer wants to back out because of this, quote-unquote, you know, crack that was suddenly found in the garage that if you, you know, and I saw the crack. It's like, well, that crack ain't, you know, it's not new. What do you do in situations like that? Because, you know, the customer was telling me what we think happened is that they, you know, over the weekend, they just went out and found something that they liked better. And so
there's a couple of things. First of all, if the escrow isn't closed and the buyer wants to back out, the buyer can back out. Now, if there's a penalty for backing out or if there's not a penalty for backing out, that's all in the contract and that's worked out between the two agents and the escrow. But you can't, in the state of California, and I don't think in the United States, you can't force somebody to buy something if they don't want to. Now, depending on how far they go into that escrow progress, once they get an accepted offer and they had an inspection and, you know, the time period, you know.
I think that was really the key. I think that was
okay.
The time period, you know.
Well, then you have to talk about, you know, you might lose your earnest money. You might. Every contract's different. They're set different ways. You know, there's 7 days for your disclosures. And, you know, there's in an RPA, which is your purchase agreement here in California, and they're throughout the state. Each one's different, though, in different states. But, you know, there's time periods. So you have contingencies that have to be done. If it's a loan purchase, it has to be appraised, and then your loan has to approve it. You have disclosures that go out to people, and then you have your inspection. You get your inspection report. The buyer can decide at that point, you know, these are items that are, you know, here or not, and those type of things. So even if all those went to the 11th hour, like you said, and went back, buyer could still say, I don't want to buy that. Not necessarily would there be maybe a penalty. He may lose their earnest money over it. You know, that is a possibility, and that's something
sure.
That, you know, buyers have to take seriously when they enter into a contract.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, okay, so that, fair answer, you know, and that, I think that's an illuminating response. That was probably not what I expected, but that's, of course, the professional answer that, of course, only you would give. Here's another question for you that came up recently that one of my clients, this is a different one, that was talking about. They were unhappy with their agent. So, again, I won't mention names, places, dates, or any of that type of stuff, but it was not a Keller Williams agency, and it was not you. So you're off the hook. But the agent, the customer was saying, I'm really unhappy with my agent because they are only going to get a certain percentage on the sale of the house. And so they're not trying to drive anybody in to see the house because they're not motivated to sell this for me. And, you know, if the agent doesn't do, this is what the customer said. The customer said, so I called the agent and said, you know, I don't care that you're getting, you know, whatever percentage. You're going to list this with, I think she said, like a 4% whatever for the buyer's agent. And if you don't like that, then, you know, you're out of here in X number of days or whatever because you have failed to bring in, you know, foot traffic to come see the house. We need to get this house sold. Is that something that you encounter often, or how does the negotiation work when you sit down with folks? Because I always thought there was a
6% usually.
Right.
But you know, I'll take, if you want to negotiate, I'll take 7 anytime.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah.
Seven's
great,
great,
right? Yeah.
No, that's fine. You know, to me it's very simple. It's just you have a 6% and you have 3% on the listing agent side and then a 3% they call it on the selling agent side. And you know, sometimes your homeowners or if you're in a listing will want to negotiate that. And, you know, it's, you know, and different things can come of it. I know this, you know, it's advertised in the MLS with your percentages. And, you know, it just is. I think that I don't know if really any agents do any less for what the percentages are that they're charging for it. Hopefully they wouldn't do that. But, you know, it's all a negotiation. And, you know, to me, it's just simple. I think realtors work very hard and do a lot to sell people's property. Sometimes it's just not the commission that will sell a piece of property from the agent. And in that instance, if somebody is mad at the agent, they should be mad at themselves for not knowing that up front. That, you know, that or having feelings that way, then if they're going into a contract that way, they should, you know that we'll pay the standard and just make it real simple. So that isn't a that isn't an item that we'll have to have any problems with.
Yeah, because you think, you know, because it just seemed crazy because when she was going through the, you know, and I don't ever pry, you know, it's just like, I'm here to help you with your move or I'm here to, you know, whatever, and they'll just sit, you know, sometimes they just, maybe they just don't have any other adult conversation that day, and I'm the lucky one. I don't know. But they'll just go, and you know what? And then they're off, and here we go for 10 minutes of, you know, here's my real estate nightmare type of a thing. And I'm like, holy cow, boy, that sounds terrible. I have nothing to do with this, but okay, I'm here. I can't,
are they
know.
Still? Are, is their house still up for sale?
It is, you know, after I left, I'm out of the scenario, so I did what I needed to do for my portion of my obligation, and I'm out of there. So going back in or trying to insert anything would probably not be appropriate. No,
I'm just asking, is their house still up for sale? Okay.
You know,
has it been on the market long?
It was on the market for a period of time, and I think the original issue was that the thought was the real estate agent that was handling it was not happy with whatever percentage they were going to get, and therefore wasn't spending a lot of time marketing it. Now,
they probably most likely should then cancel the contract and have another realtor come on in and wants to sell it.
And see, and that's kind of what I was thinking. But without saying any of this, the customer is saying, you know, if the agent doesn't get it sold by, you know, this particular date, and, you know, this goes back a few weeks now, but if the agent doesn't get it sold by this particular date, I've already talked to, you know, a different agent and explained the situation, and, you know, here's what we're going to do. But, you know, the whole thing just seemed very litigious, and I'm like, oh, I'm absolutely the opposite of that a million percent. And so anytime I'm just like, oh, you're opening a can of worms here, you know. So, and she just kept going on and on and on. I just wished her well. I said, thank you very much, and, you know, and off I went. But it was like one thing after another was happening with, you know, the sale of the house or, you know, having to get things fixed up or whatever. And it was like, I just didn't get that. And that's honestly, it's just not an experience that I run into a lot. And so I didn't know in all of, you know, like, because I know that, you know, you do it one way, and that's the right way. But, you know, sometimes you end up working with people who are either going to be a buyer or seller, you know, on the other end of the fence from whatever you're doing. And sometimes you run into people who just kind of either do business weird or have weird people they're representing. And I guess that was really more the line of questioning is, you know, how do you really kind of deal with that?
I really haven't too much. I mean, I haven't had that. I've heard about things like that, but I haven't. All I can say is that, you know, most realtors I know, and we have a lot of realtors out of our office besides myself, and we're none of us that I know are that way. So, you know, it's just it's a negotiation when you present it to your seller. You go over what you're going to do, and, you know, I put it in writing and follow up with that. And I know a lot of agents also that do the same. And, you know, that's the way mostly it is. There, you know, there are now in today's market, the average day on the market has increased from last year. I mean, in Huntington Beach, well, the average days on the market has increased, in your city right now. Last year, ending July, there were under 60 days. They're over 70 days now. And so, you know, the average days have gone a little higher, you know, that from last year. So, you know, if you share that information with your sellers, I think most people, as long as you communicate and you share the information with them, they don't have any problems making the right decisions.
So if you're posing the situation, and again, everybody's circumstance is completely different, so you can't just generalize here, but when you're presenting this to the customer, and let's just use $1 million as an example. That's probably high for most places everywhere, but just for fun, we're going to say $1 million is kind of what they're thinking they're going to get for their house. And boy, that's 70 days, average days on market, seems a little high to them, and they're saying, you know, boy, you know, is there anything we can do to kind of maybe speed this along? Since it's not exactly like, you know, before the signs in the ground, the house has already got 10 competing offers. What do you do to help kind of either market or sometimes maybe just be the shoulder to cry on or shoulder to bounce ideas off of with your client to help them either prepare for that 70 days or make it shorter?
Well, what you can do is first with your seller, what you do is you with sellers, I ask them what's their motivation. How soon do they want to sell? Okay, and then you have a market price that you come up with from the comps in the area. You know, if there's a question on those, we can have an appraisal of the property. So then it's, you know, you have a set amount on the comps, but you know, an appraisal comes in. You know, there are conditions of the property that will affect a home that could vary from the comps outside. There's the location of the property. And, you know, there's certain things that you can do as a salesperson or certain things that the seller can do, but there's certain things you can't, like location you can't. You can't do much about the market. Well, the salesperson can do a lot with the marketing. But with the comps, they're historical. There's not much at the market value at that point. If you have a seller that is like $1 million and they don't want to wait that 70 days, then you would really have to think, okay, how many percentages, how are we going to get more traffic in there? And to drive more traffic, first on the Internet, because they still say 90% of your home sales are on the Internet, right? And then, you know, then enter marketing through other salespeople in the area, not just your people in your office, but other people in offices that work that area. And then you come up with open house schedules. You come up with direct mailers, letting people know in the neighborhood. That, you know, because sometimes you get a lot of people that will buy homes because they love that neighborhood and they know that their family member or friend wants to move in there also. You would then adjust the price. So necessarily you would maybe drop it down 3% or a few percent under the market to drive more traffic and more people interested in that home. Because when it comes down to it, it's the price.
Yeah, I mean, you're so right, because you can have the perfect house and have it be, you know, $20,000 over your absolute maximum cap, or you can have, boy, this is a close second, and it comes in right on budget, and, you know, you'll always have the regret. But it didn't have the jacuzzi tub and the master suite. You know what? You can buy that later on.
Well, you know, that I think that comes into where you the condition of the home inside.
Sure.
And, you know, those type of things. And, you know, if you have maybe a difference between what the comp value is and the condition of the property inside, an appraisal is always a good way to go.
There you go. So do you have a fun real estate story that you can share with us about maybe something that's happened with, you know, something you've been involved in the last 3 or 4 months, maybe a success story or something that was really fun for one of your clients?
Oh, I have lots of them, but, you know.
We have time for two or three if you want. You know,
no,
cool.
We don't. We don't. No, we don't.
Okay.
No,
okay,
come
okay.
on. I can't. You know, one thing I did want to share with you is that everybody's talking about cash buyers, right?
Yeah.
And there's 33% of home sales are cash buyers. And of that, yeah, I know, and they come across everywhere. A lot of cash buyers, at least I think of first, is international buyers. And
sure.
Everybody thinks of international buyers as probably a lot of buyers from maybe China or different parts of the world. Do you know that in the United States here in 2014, international buyers, 19% were from Canada? And China, they
wow.
came from 16%. And so, you know, Canadian, you know, the old adage, you know, Canadian snowbirds, they're still 19%. So,
wow.
you know, it breaks down. And where they're buying is in the country, 23% in Florida, 14% here in California, 12% in Texas, and then 6% in New Mexico, and 4% in Washington. And of those
That's
international
buyers...
Yeah, it's different. Of those international buyers, 60% of them are buying with cash.
Yeah, I guess, you know, I just shake my head because it's like, you know, I look at the home prices in Southern California, and of course, I think we're under this really kind of weird bubble that everything just costs a fortune here. If you go to, you know, lots of other markets, the pricing is in a completely different stratosphere, meaning probably, you know, quote-unquote, much more affordable. But... you know, where does somebody have $649,900 just, you know, sitting around? That just astounds me.
Well, they're yeah, they're coming from markets necessarily where, you know, in Europe and everything, they're paying higher interest rates, and
oh, yeah.
their mortgages are a shorter period of time. You know, they're just several years. They're not 30 years.
Wow.
So, you know,
well, they think they're probably getting a deal here.
They're getting a great deal here.
Cool. So let me ask you this. From a real estate standpoint, of course, you are calling in here tonight to be my VIP special guest star. So everybody, this is John Brashear with Keller Williams Realty. If someone was in the Southern California market and just thought about, you know what, boy, that John was a really nice guy. He sounds like somebody I would like to have show homes to me, or I'd like him to list my home. How would people try to contact you?
Well, my phone number is 714-244-5310. And my website's www.johnbrashear.us. But it's not just here in Southern California. Of course, I'm only licensed in California here, but, you know, I'm a Keller Williams agent, and we have market centers across the United States. And I'd love to help somebody in another part of the country get themselves with a great agent and help them be able to, you know, either buy or sell.
And I think that's, you know, again, I'm just always impressed by talking to you, John. You know, your integrity and your degree of just being a professional in this market, I think, is really to be admired because there are, again, probably just like in moving, you know, you get 99% of the people that do it right and you got the 1% of the crazies that give everybody else a bad name. You know, you're in that 99% where, you know, you have the integrity, you have the background, you have the training, you have the marketing behind you. So everything you do is, you know, just so spot on. Hey, before I let you go, I do have a question for you. If I were to call you and say, John, I want to hire a real estate agent, would you come and audition for me, or whatever the appropriate term is? What
I interview?
Do you do? Yeah.
I guess it matters. What would it be? Would it be for a buyer, or would you be selling something?
Let's pretend I was – well, I don't know if it's different for either. So let's talk about buyers. So let's say I needed to buy a place, and I said, I'm going to be interviewing agents, John. I'd like you to be one of them. And I invited you to where I currently live. What would you want to spend your time doing, and how much time should we plan to spend together, and what should be as a buyer looking for an agent to work with, what should be maybe two or three things that – after our meeting, I should have as a takeaway that really should be aha moments for me?
Well, I guess you would come across or take away, maybe 15 minutes, 10, 15 minutes for a buyer, and you can do a buyer's consultation with someone. And it really you should take away that you have confidence completely in that agent or salesperson to find you the home at the perfect home for the right price. So, you're finding exactly what you want, and you're not paying too much for it.
So, I'm going to try to pin you down a little bit harder here, because my assumption is because at the end of the day, you're a salesperson, you're their advocate as a buying agent, but, you're really there to kind of sell them on you and what you bring to the table compared to somebody else. So I would assume that the other two agents I'm going to interview are probably going to say, well, my deal is, this and that, and you're going to say, that sounds just like the other two guys. How do I make a decision? What is it that sets you apart from other people that might be interviewed where at the end of the day people go, I really feel most comfortable working with John. He just seems to be most on the ball.
Well, I think that is really one, it comes down to a connection. And that, that's not necessarily someone who just has the right numbers or maybe is the smoothest in their delivery of how they're going to do it. Really, it's market knowledge in the area that you want, depending whatever that home is, and if that's in Huntington Beach or if that's a single-family residence or a condo or maybe both of, and being able to really be able to know not only the market knowledge, but to be able to help you through that home purchase. And that's really necessarily it's not having the most experience, but be able to help you individually through that home purchase. And if you can't answer all those questions, you find out who can and do that in a matter that's ASAP to that buyer. And
sure.
At least when I try to work with a buyer or a seller, I try to make them feel that they're my only client that I'm working with. And, I try to, if the phone rings at 11 o'clock, I pick it up. I talk to them. Emails, I respond to them within the hour. Things like that. And I think I know a lot of agents here in my office that do the same. And, I think that's the difference. Really, it is.
So if I go to your website, johnbrashear.us, and look for where you're actively serving, meaning, where you can help people buy or sell houses, what would be some of the communities that people should expect to have John as an expert in?
Well, I work Orange County and also all of Southern California. Of course, I'm licensed in California, but, Orange County and Southern California.
Cool. Okay. So, John, one more time, just to, so we can be blatantly promoting you here tonight. What's your number again?
I appreciate that.
And a good email for you. Okay,
714-244-5310, and it's J1234, orange@AOL.com.
There we go. Everybody, this has been John Brashear with Keller Williams Realty. If you want to buy or sell a home in Southern California, John's your man. John, stay on the line. We'll be right back after this.
Well, he used to be mine, not so very long ago. I was crazy to ever let him get away. But girl, you should know better than to go bragging in my face. So forgive me for what I'm about to say. Big deal, so what, who cares? Just got lucky, that's all.
doesn't like a little Leon Rimes? That was Leon Rimes and her big hit, Big Deal. And our big deal tonight was we had John Brashear with Keller Williams Realty on the line with us. You can also find out more about buying and selling houses in Southern California by going to johnbrashear.us. And John, during the music break, said he will be posting the new FICO model could raise credit scores article that he was talking about from the New York Times. He'll be posting that on his website. And also the web, it was, I didn't write it down while we were talking, the website for the FHA or the vet loan program or whatever, he's going to post that on his website. So for more information, go to johnbrashear.us, and you can get that information. So that's always kind of cool. Love having him on the show because he always has so much to share. And so my goal is to try to get him back once a month. And here's what ends up happening. You know, I get 3 or 4 weeks into this, and I haven't rescheduled him. And it's like, John, I think we need to have you back. And it's like, I've been waiting for your call. So I think I need to put him like on like the Amazon Auto Ship program and just get John on the Rated G Radio Auto Program and get him back on a regular basis. So we'll have him back on in September at some point talking about what's happening in fall home buying and selling. And, again, thanks to John. So if you have been a regular listener to the show, you'll know that during the holidays, it was right before the holidays, we had Kelly Fitzgerald on talking about her album Into Christmas. She is a local musician in the Long Beach area. She plays at events, besides touring all over, she plays at events locally, and she is promoting her current album, which is called B-E. Kelly Fitzgerald, her album B is available on iTunes today. And I share this with you because tonight she is at the Boathouse in Long Beach until 9 o'clock. And I was even debating about even bringing this up because it's like an hour. So if you're in Long Beach, hop in the car right now. Go see her for an hour. You'll have a great time. But here's a schedule of her upcoming events. So if you want to go hang out with Kelly and see her play not only original music, but she does a lot of covers and does great takes on the covers. So she plays everything from Daft Punk to Pharrell Williams to Leanne Rimes to, if it's been a hit on the radio and it's been popular, she knows it. That's just the way it is. You know, she'll have little girls that will come up to her at, the Hyatt Resort when she's playing at the Sunset Grill, and they'll want to hear this song or that song, and you got like 12 little girls dancing on the dance floor, which is just a sight for sore eyes. And then, people will come up and say, I want something a little bit more current, so she'll play Daft Punk's Get Lucky. Where are you going to find somebody with that kind of depth and range? Anyway, so here is a schedule of Kelly's upcoming appearances tomorrow, Thursday, August 14th. Kelly will be appearing 11 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. at the Sawdust Festival. That's at 935 Laguna Canyon Road in Laguna Beach, and it's going to be at the Tavern. So apparently this is like a big darn deal, and the Sawdust Festival, I think, ends tomorrow or this weekend, so it's going to be her last appearance of the season at the Sawdust Festival at the Tavern. Again, that's at 935 Laguna Canyon Road, Laguna Beach, Thursday, tomorrow, 11 to 3:30 p.m. Then tomorrow night, she gets in her car and hikes up the road just a little bit to Tommy Bahamas in Newport Beach. That's 854 Avocado Avenue in Newport Beach. It's really on the corner of PCH and Avocado. You cannot miss it. And the first time I went there, it was to have lunch with my music producer, Brian Pothier, and his girlfriend, Carol Lee, who is a brilliant muralist sought after worldwide. And I'm going, why do they want to have lunch at Tommy Bahama? They're going to be having, clothing here. Maybe they got like a snack tray or something they bring out. They had a great restaurant with some amazing food. But Kelly plays there tomorrow night, 5:30 to 9:30. And then Friday, the 15th, she's playing Gladstone's in Long Beach from 7 to 10 p.m. So after the Friday night dance party, you can just head on over there to Gladstone's in Long Beach, and she's doing what they call a duo. It's her playing with somebody else, with Brian Pothier, my music producer. Saturday the 16th, she's playing noon to 3 at Fashion Island outside of Bloomingdale's. The actual address is 901 Newport Center Drive in Newport Beach, and that's Kelly playing, again, Fashion Island Saturday the 16th from noon to 3, Saturday night, 7 to 10. She's at Gladstone's again. It's a duo, this time with Adam Roach. And so Gladstone's is at 330 South Pine in Long Beach. I'm going to tell you from previous attempts to go to Gladstone's, if you can find a place to go park and you want to go either have a great meal at Gladstone's or go walk around or do whatever, this is great, or go do valet parking. I understand valet parking is like $6, but parking any place in the area, for you know, because you're going to have to pay for parking, it's going to be at least $6, if not more. So I didn't realize this until after my last attempt at going to Gladstone's to see Kelly and Brian play, and then you go and then realize that, oh, if I would have just paid the valet, it would have been the same price. And I would have not have gone home frustrated because I couldn't find a parking space, because I tried for like a half an hour to find it, and I said, this is God's way of telling me I don't need to be here tonight, so I kind of left. So that is Kelly's schedule for the upcoming days. Just a little bit of music news, share this with you. Yesterday, or actually Monday and Tuesday, I went into the recording studio with my music producer, Brian Pothier, and we started the new full-length musical album for me, and we actually got the first track about 80% done yesterday. Process is that I'll go in and say, I've got these lyrics, and he'll say, how do you want it to sound? And I say, well, I want a little, you know, I want a little guitar here, I want a little flute here, I want a little this here and that here. And then he just comes up with the music on the spot in his head, and we put it into the computer. I say we, it's the royal we, he does it. And then at the end of that, he's like, do you like it? I'm like, yeah, I think that's really awesome. And then I'll go back in and sing the vocals like I did yesterday. From a singing standpoint, one of the things that I will tell you from my last experience last year, having vocal lessons and having the brilliant Bill Sinkay help me with my singing ability is paying off in spades. Now, I'm not perfect by any stretch. However, my range, my ability to almost hit the pitch, stay on tune, and all of those other things has been just greatly, greatly improved over the last 10, 12 months, and I know that just for a fact, because there was only really one spot yesterday where I had to hit a certain note, hold it for what seemed like about 400 hours, and then end the note. And in music, or at least you know in what we're doing here, everything that you're going to hear on this musical track from a vocal standpoint is me. The highs, the really, really lows, and everything in between, and getting on to some of those notes and then holding them, and you know, I'd be like, and I don't know what the actual number is, let's just say 20 seconds. I need to hold the note for 20 seconds. I would get to like second 17, and I have not a single stitch of breath left in my body. And it's like, we're so close, try it again. And, you know, and here I try it again and again and again. So we actually, that took the longest yesterday, is to try to hit that one section of the music. But I'm going to be going into my vocal training with Bill on Monday. And we're going to kind of do a preview of what I accomplished in the last couple of days. And then I'm going back in the studio Monday afternoon and finishing the song. So that was really, really cool and exciting. Super excited for that and always grateful. So as we get ready to kind of wrap up the show, let's talk a little bit about some famous birthdays here. We've got a few that you may actually know. And I say few meaning a very, very few. So we're just going to go with what we've got here. Mr. Dana Bonaducci is 55 today. He's the best known, he's best known as the child actor in the TV series The Partridge Family, playing Danny. He was also a professional wrestler and a radio personality. The professional wrestler part, I think, is a stretch to say. Radio personality, absolutely. I think he's probably made his living as a radio personality for the last 15, 20 years doing that more than anything else. His stint as a professional wrestler was on a very short-lived Hulk Hogan, Eric Bischoff produced things like So You Want to Be a Rock Star, So You Want to Be a, you know, whatever, you know, like the reality shows on TV. And it had Dennis Rodman and a bunch of, you know, C or D list quasi celebrities that wanted to become the first, you know, celebrity professional world champion at professional wrestling. So he did that. Did not win. I think he probably should have. They gave it to Dennis Rodman, which I think was a, you know, just for PR purposes only. But that gets me on a totally different track, which I won't go tonight. Let's see here. In 2007, Danny was part of the Adam Carolla Show. He was married 3 times and has 2 children, and Danny Bonaducci is 55 today. We've also got Mr. Fidel Castro. He was born this day in 1926. He is 88 years old. He's the infamous Cuban dictator and revolutionary who came to power in 1959 and served as his country's prime minister until 1976 and as president from 76 to 2008. He was born into a relatively prosperous family, but his father insisted that he grew up with the children of the impoverished laborers on his father's farm so he would understand the misfortune of others. His uneasy missile alliance with the Soviet leader Nikita Khrushchev in the early 60s greatly concerned the United States, leading to the Cuban Missile Crisis. He was married to Murta Diaz-Balart from 1948 until 1955, was remarried in 1980 to Dalia Sotel del Valle, associated with. He successfully thwarted a U.S. plan established by Dwight Eisenhower and implemented by John Kennedy to overthrow him in April 1961, forever remembered in history as the disastrous Bay of Pigs invasion, and Fidel Castro turns 88 years old today. Other people having birthdays today. I like this one. I like these two, actually, so we're going to celebrate them both. Annie Oakley, born this day in 1860 in Ohio. She is a sharpshooter who starred in Buffalo Bill's Wild West Show, and she could consistently shoot a playing card edge on from 27 meters away. Wow. She began hunting and trapping at age 8, and she is arguably the first American woman to become a superstar. She married traveling show marksman Francis E. Butler after having a showdown in August 1876, and Theodore Roosevelt admired her talent. Annie Oakley, born this day in 1860. And our last birthday of the day is Mr. Alfred Hitchcock, born this day in 1899, died April 29, 1980, at the age of 80. He's the iconic director in suspenseful classics such as Psycho, Rear Window, and The Birds. His father sent him to the police station to be locked up 10 minutes. He was locked up for 10 minutes, hence his lifelong fear of the police. I don't know what happened in that 10 minutes, but it wasn't probably like 7 minutes of heaven, that's for sure. Trivia note, he was considered to be one of the greatest directors of all time. He made an appearance in every one of his films. He married Alma Raville on December 2nd, 1926, in The couple had a daughter, Patricia. He directed Grace Kelly in the film Rear Room. Obviously, I can't talk for the rest of the show. Anyhow, happy birthday to Alfred Hitchcock. If you are looking for a great interview, or really it's more a great guest that was on the show, and you did not hear Tuesday's episode of Rated G Radio, I'm going to encourage you to go back and listen to Dave Talbot's interview for his book, The Cabin, which was co-written by his mother for her memoirs years ago in 1933, his 11-year difference, starting his tale at 1944, and going through their time of growing up in southwestern Oregon, Rogue River area, Grants Pass. Encourage you to do that. What a great man and a great talent, and I'm glad to call him a friend as well. He is just one of the most amazing people I've had a chance to meet, and for somebody who is 81 years old, sharp as a tack, knows his stories, and is a great storyteller. We're going to be back live on Thursday for a headline show, and then Friday will be, of course, the dance party. We may be doing more Twix Mix because the people went crazy for it last week. If you're one of the people, thanks for your feedback, and we will see you live Thursday night. Have a great night, everybody. Don't drive distracted.
You've been listening to Rated G Radio.